periodically in life you just really hate. I don't know, maybe it makes you uncomfortable. I know one of the Eisenberg boys, he told me about his chemistry test. And, you know, that this was a real bear, and, you know, I'd just rather avoid that. But it's just something that has to be done. And I'm sure you have those things. I have those things. And one of those things that I really don't like is searching for a job. And I see about 4 head nods. You know, filling out those things online, waiting for somebody to call, you know, calling and trying to set up contacts, praying that you can get an interview, and then the whole mess of trying to go through an interview, you know, sending the thank you card afterwards, you know, hoping, that is, if you feel like it was a match, you know, hoping that that you might get a call back, you know, from all the other 75,000 people that is applying for the same job. It's just a tedious process. I don't know that it's necessarily physically difficult. It's just, to me, it's just gut-wrenching. It's emotionally, it's spiritually difficult to go through that job hunt process. I'm thankful to God. I was thinking this week of the past number of jobs that I've had. I think the past only one of the past 5 jobs that I've had did I actually have to go through that kind of process. 4 of the last 5 jobs, they actually came to me saying, we'd like to put you in this position. Somebody called me up and offered me a job. I had about 10 years ago a job working in a retail store, working nights, unloading trucks. And so that's the only job I can think of in the past, dozen years or so that I've actually had to go through an interview process. Thank God, because I don't like it. Perhaps you don't either. This week's Haftor portion includes the idea of an interview process. I'm looking at the Haftor portion in Jeremiah chapter 1. There is actually a dual tradition in this week's reading of a difference in the Haftor portion. The Haftor portions are the readings from the prophets, like Joshua, Judges, Samuel, Kings, Hosea, Jeremiah, Zechariah, Malachi. For instance, from one of those books that complement the reading from the Torah portion. They're in different sections of Jewish tradition. At times, they picked different readings. And this week is one of those traditions. The Ashkenazi, that is the European, Northern, Eastern European Jewish tradition, picked a Haftor portion from the book of Isaiah, chapters 27, 28, a couple verses from chapter 29, while the Sephardic Jewish tradition, which by and large developed their traditions and styles, customs, the liturgy is even different in some respects, those were developed separately. And sometimes there is a different reading in the Sephardic tradition, which was the Spanish, Southern Europe, Mediterranean Jewish traditions. And this particular week, that tradition picks Jeremiah chapter 1 through the 3rd verse of chapter 2. and because I can, I chose to go with this week with the Sephardic reading from the Haftorah portion. In some respects, it mirrors significantly a story from the Torah portion. That is, when after Moses has been out taking care of his father-in-law's sheep for many, many years, one tradition that we later learn is that after he's been a shepherd for 40 years, which is amazing, he's gone from the palace to the pasture, the prince to a shepherd. And so he's out there one day, and as the third son of Rav Eisenberg outlined for us, he was encountered by a bush that was on fire, but yet wasn't burning. And as he pointed out, no figure. And God commissions him. God interviews Moses for a job assignment. And he sends Moses on a task. To me, it's interesting. God had promised back at the end of Genesis, the last chapter of Genesis, that God would bring Israel out. And in earlier in this week's Torah portion, God said, I have come because I have heard the groanings of Israel, and I am going to bring them out. So God tells Moses, so you go, take them out. I just loved reading that this week. It's as if God said, I'm going to bring them out, and here, I'm giving you the job. You get to do my job, God says, which is a different way of thinking about how we partner with God. God allows us to participate with Him. But on another level, God is interviewing us, saying, here, I have a job that needs to be done. You get to do my job, God tells Moses. And in some respect, this reading from Jeremiah chapter 1 is much in the same light. We are told, Jeremiah 1, the words of Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah in Ivrit, son of Hilkiah, one of the priests at Anatot in the territory of Benjamin. The word of the Lord came to him, and then we were told when, in the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, and through the reign of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, son of Judah, down to the 5th month of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah. By the way, that's a span of about 35, 40 years there. And we're told, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. Ah, Lord God, I said, I don't know how to speak. I'm only a child. But the Lord said to me, do not say, I am only a child. You must go to everyone I send you and say whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to rescue you, declares the Lord. Then the Lord reached out his hand and touched my mouth and said to me, now I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over the nations and kingdoms to uproot, tear down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant. The word of the Lord came to me, saying, Jeremiah, what do you see? I see a branch of an almond tree. And the Lord said to me, you have seen correctly, for I am watching. The Hebrew word sounds much like the Hebrew word for almond. It's a play on Hebrew wordplay. I am watching to see that my word is fulfilled. And then again, the word of the Lord came to me, what do you see? I see a boiling pot tilting away from the north. The Lord said to me, from the north, disaster will be poured on all who live in the land. I'm about to summon all the people of the northern kingdoms. Verse 17, get yourself ready, stand up, say to whomever I command you, do not be afraid of them, or I will terrify you before them. Today I have made you a fortified city, an iron pillar, a bronze wall, to stand up against the whole land, against kings, its officials, its priests, and the people of the land. They will fight against you, but not overcome you, for I am with you and I will rescue you, declares the Lord. This is Jeremiah's job interview. He has been interviewed by the King of the Universe. The King of the Universe has a task to be done. It's interesting to think of all the peoples that God called, almost all of the prophets in Scripture, there is a story of them being summoned by God. In this week's Torah portion, we have Moses. We have a guy named Samuel, who is summoned and called by God. People like Jeremiah here, or Ezekiel chapter 2 and 3. Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 6. There is a story in Isaiah 49 about God summoning Israel. And there are very interesting dynamics and correspondences to all of these stories. They all seem to fit together, and I want to highlight some of the unique things that show up in all or most of these stories, and then I want to apply them to the life of Israel, our people, and to our lives as well. God tells Jeremiah that you were picked from birth. I had your eye on you for the longest time. I even crafted you to be who you are. I shaped you. That's what the word to form means. It was first used in the creation story when it says that God built the woman for the man. That means there's planning involved. It's not even just speaking it into existence. It's shaping and forming it into something that is just the way it's supposed to be. God says, I knew you when you were in the womb. I formed you from birth. In the same way, turn to Isaiah 49. I want to highlight this section here in Isaiah 49 about Israel. Chapter 49 of Isaiah, it says, listen to me, you islands. Hear this, you distant nations. Before I was born, the Lord called me. From my birth, He has made mention of my name. He shaped my mouth like a sharp sword, and in the shadow of His hand, He has hidden me. He made me into a polished arrow and concealed me in His quiver. He said to me, you are my servant, Israel, in whom I display my splendor. Now finally we learn who it is that this poem is talking about. Israel, my servant, in whom I display my splendor. But I said, this is the words of Israel, I said, I have labored for no purpose. I have spent all my strength in vain and for nothing. Yet what is due me is in the Lord's hand, and my reward is with my God. And now the Lord says, He who formed me in the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob back to himself, to gather Israel to himself, for I am honored in the eyes of the Lord. He says, verse 6, it is too small a thing for you to be my servant, to restore the tribes of Jacob, to bring back those of Israel I have kept. I will also make you a light to the nations, that you may bring my salvation to the ends of the earth. A poetic retelling of Genesis chapter 12. I have blessed you. I've chosen you to be a blessing. All the families of the earth will be blessed through you. Though they will sometimes curse, God says, I will take care of that. You be a blessing. I will bless those among the nations that choose to stand with you, Abraham, and you will be a blessing. In poetic terms, in Isaiah 49, Israel is the servant who is chosen from birth. One more story of someone chosen from birth. Turn to Galatians chapter 1. This is the writings of Rav Shaul, and that gives away who we're talking about. Rav Shaul says in Galatians chapter 1, beginning with verse 15, I persecuted the kehilot of God. I persecuted the communities of Messiah, and I tried to destroy it. I was advancing beyond many others my own age and was extremely zealous. But when God, who set me apart from birth, do you hear that same language? But God, verse 15, who set me apart from birth, called me by His grace, was pleased to reveal His Son to me, that I might preach Him among the nations. I did not consult any person, nor did I go up to Jerusalem, but I went immediately to Arabia and returned later to Damascus. Relationship to the story of Jeremiah. Jeremiah, God says, I've chosen you from birth. Don't you realize that I've had my eyes on you from the very beginning? Israel, I've chosen you from birth. Rav Shaul has the same kind of experience. All of these people are appointed. God tells Jeremiah, I have called you, I have appointed you. Moses, God comes to Moses and says, I've picked you. Rabbi Shaul, we're told there that he was set apart, consecrated. It's the idea of being holy, being consecrated. The word for holy literally means to be removed, to be set apart, to have special purpose. Israel was set apart, made holy by God for that special purpose. Ezekiel, Isaiah, Samuel, the same story. I remember one time in one of the job interviews, I was interviewing for one of the social service agencies I worked for. It was even It was one of the most difficult situations. I'd worked in many. I'd even worked at one point in a domestic violence shelter with women who were, but actually, one of the most intense places I worked was a short-term crisis shelter for teenagers. These were kids. Some of them were between foster placements, but many of them were kids on the... They weren't violent kids. Those kids went downtown to juvie. But these were kids that were in vulnerable places. It wasn't a permanent home for them to come live. It was a short-term, 30-day max intervention attempt to bring some stability into their lives. Some of the kids were even runaways. And I remember the big guy who interviewed me. I could see why he was the director of the shelter. Just his presence was stabilizing anytime he walked into a room. And Joe asked me, "Is what can we count on?" Yeah, well, he first asked me a question. Do you have any questions? Don't you love that when they ask you that in that job interview? Do you have any questions? And you're going, oh, God, help me. What's the right questions that I need to ask? And I told Joe, I said, you know, I've never worked with a population like this. I've worked in other crisis environments, but this is unique. I don't know that I'll have the, you know, I don't know that I'll have the authoritarian manner that I need for these kids. You know, maybe I'll let them get away with. And Joe said, you know, that's actually exactly what they need. He asked me if one of those questions. Well, what can we count on from you? And I remember saying, the only thing I can say that you can be sure and count on from me is that I'll care about these kids. Some months later, after I got the job, he confided that was the best answer he'd ever gotten from that question. He says, well, usually people say really corny things like, well, you can count on the fact that I'll show up at work on time, as if that's something they need to expect. That's just a given. But on one level, I felt unprepared. I felt unworthy to have that kind of job. And you know what? Jeremiah felt the same way in his job interview with God. God, I don't know how to speak. I'm only a kid. Now, how old he was, I don't know. It seems that often in Scripture, not always, but often, as Shimon pointed out, God once called an 80-year-old to a special task. But often God calls those that are young. Not always, but often. We get an example of that with a 12-year-old named Samuel. A young person who was Paul's protege, a man named Timothy. Or a young man named David, who was so unlikely, must have been so young, his brothers and his own father did not recognize that he could be a person of substance. Jeremiah was the same way. God, I'm too young to do this. I don't even know how to speak. I'm not worthy. I'm not up to the task. Even Rabbi Paul, in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, says, well, I know what you guys really think of me. You say, well, his letters are very forceful and strong. But in person, you think, is this really the same guy? I mean, he writes really well, but when you see meeting in person, he's not much of anybody. His speaking isn't all that eloquent. He actually talks about that in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. He said, I don't come to you with eloquent words. I'm not much of a speaker. Moses, in this week's Torah portion, felt the same way. There's not much to my speaking. At least that's the way he felt. Do you remember the scene in Fiddler on the Roof when Rev Tevye the prophet says about Moses? He says, everybody's talking about, well, Moses said, and Tevye says, you know, for a guy that had difficulty speaking, he said quite a bit. That idea was already written in Acts chapter 7, verse 22. In Stephen's speech before the Sanhedrin, Stephen, speaking of Moses, said that Moses was trained in all the wisdom of Egypt. And get this, he was powerful in speech and action. Moses was powerful in speech? Then where did he get this thing? I can't talk. It's not that he couldn't talk. It's not like he was mute or unschooled. It was that he didn't feel eloquent in himself. Jeremiah, Rabbi Paul, Moses, all felt like they didn't have what it took to be God's spokesperson. Isaiah felt the same way. Isaiah chapter 6, here is a priest evidently working within the sanctuary, and while he's in there, you know, lighting the candles or something on the menorah, the wicks, suddenly he has a vision of the Most High. And he has visions of the angels giving honor to God, and they are saying, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Yeah, you've heard that before. It's made its way into our liturgy. And when he has that image, he suddenly goes, oy vey, I'm in here in the sanctuary. I kind of thought this was a routine, but I suddenly realized I don't have what it takes. It's interesting. It was the same thing. My mouth is unclean, he said. My mouth's impure. I can't speak. I can't represent this holy God, this infinitely separate deity. I don't have what it takes. But did you know in that process of our job interview before the Most High, that is exactly the heart that God embraces? A heart that says, God, you're going to have to step in and help me. It's like Joe, the big guy who was the director of that youth shelter, told me, it was those very words that you said in that interview that bought you, that won you the position for that job. By the way, I don't know if that's always going to work for every job you have. Not every director is looking for that kind of vulnerability. Usually we think in a job interview we have to go in with vibrato and gravitas. With the Most High, He wants a heart that is pliable. Rabbi Paul said, I didn't come to you with eloquent words, but I came to you with a demonstration of God's Spirit and His power. It's a recognition that it's not our strength. There was another guy named Gideon who God specifically whittled his army from 32,000 to 300. By the way, that's like just a tenth of 1% of his original number. And he's like, God, what the heck are you doing? And God said, I want you to recognize that the power comes from me, not you. Did that mean that Gideon didn't get the position? Of course he did. He led the people, his army of 300, into battle, and they defeated an army multiple times its their size. In fact, even larger than his size of his original army. But God told Gideon, I'm doing this so that you know that the victory is not yours, the victory is mine. So it's interesting to me that in almost all of these cases, Moses, Rav Shaul, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, if you want to check out his call, all of them said, God, I don't have the words to say. I don't have what it takes. I'm not worthy, I'm unable. But in every one of those cases, God came in and said, I'll give you the words. In Jeremiah's case, in this week's Haftorah portion, God touches Jeremiah's lips. Touched by God's hand. In Isaiah's case, in this vision that he has, one of those angels takes a coal off the altar, which was a holy place, and the coal touches Isaiah's lips. Again, the idea of the mouth being cleansed, the lips being prepared. God's told Jeremiah, when Jeremiah said, God, I don't have the words to say. God said, great. I'm not looking for your words anyway. God says, I will put my words in you. God told Ezekiel the exact same thing. You will open your mouth and you will declare my words. So in this job interview process that every one of us go through, when we're afraid, because they all were, Moses, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, definitely Israel, over and over through Isaiah, God says, fear not, Israel, fear not. So in our case, when we're afraid, when we don't feel like we're up for the task, when we don't think that we're going to get the position from the supervisor of the universe, He is the one that is able to step in to give the strength, to fill you with His words, to equip you with His Spirit, His presence there with you. You do not have to be afraid. In the example, the calling of Isaiah, he said, when God said, in kind of this indirect sort of way, you know, Isaiah's in this interview, and God says, who should we pick for this? I have this job. Who should we pick? And Isaiah's going, over here! He named me, is what he says. Here I am. It's one of my favorite words in the Torah. It's what Abraham said when God called to Abraham to give Abraham a task. Abraham said, he named me. When God came to Isaiah, he said, Isaiah said, Hineni, here I am. By the way, another person, Samuel, 12-year-old. That's younger than anyone in this room. Even a 12-year-old knew the word, Hineni. Here I am. Here I am. By the way, in case you've not accepted this as your own position yet and recognized that we together are on the seat in the interview with the Master of the Universe, many of these same things show up in, for instance, Matthew chapter 10. When Messiah is speaking to 72 of his followers, interesting number, by the way, I'll let you figure out why it's 72. And he's telling them things like, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid when you go in on your task and the purpose that I have set you for. In fact, don't be afraid of them, but rather fear the one not that could even kill the body, but fear the one that has power over life and death. That is the one that we should fear. Yeshua also says things like, I know you by name. I've named you. He says things like, when you go, don't worry about what you will say in those moments. God says, I will put my words in your mouth. It's the same thing in Matthew 10 that all the prophets had been told ahead of time. God says, my words will be there. I think it's great we think about the dialogue that we might have. It's natural. We rehearse it. We run it through our heads. But God says, I'll be there. I'll put my words in you. It won't be easy. Even if you feel like you're unworthy, there's one more interesting story about Jeremiah. And it's almost brushed over in the text as if we should know it, but often we don't. It's one little insignificant detail. We're told that Jeremiah was a Levite from a place called Anatot. This is the most powerful part of the entire interview process. About 500 years before Jeremiah, there was a bad priest. He represented the Most High. He pointed Samuel. We've mentioned his name. He pointed Samuel into relationship with the Most High. But overall, he was ineffective. And his name was Eli. And Eli had two sons, Hophni and Pinchas. And they were worse than their dad. And God told Eli that your priestly line will be cut off because of the wickedness in your family. You will no longer be serving me as priests. A couple generations later, Saul, the king of Israel, massacres the whole family at a place called Nob. Because they are supporting and helping David. Only one person of the entire priestly clan in this city that Saul attacks escapes. The son of the priest there, a man named Abitar. And this young man becomes David's high priest. And Abitar serves David faithfully. And after David dies, he continues to serve one of David's sons. Unfortunately, in the scope of history, he chooses the wrong son. Zadok, the priest, is loyal to Solomon, but Abitar ends up being loyal to Solomon's rival, one of David's other sons. Abitar is the great-great-grandson of Eli. He's the last of Eli's, the priestly line, descendants of Eli. And Solomon, it was in the context of last week's Haftorah portion, actually, 1 Kings chapter 2, Solomon banishes Abitar. He doesn't kill him, but he banishes him to a place called Anatot. It's only 3 miles from Jerusalem, but in the scope of things, it might as well have been 3,000. Because although you could have seen the temple from Anatot, Abitar and his descendants were not the priestly family that were serving in the temple. Because from the time of Solomon all the way until the Hanukkah story, 800 years later, it was Zadok and his descendants that were the priests in the temple. Abitar and his descendants were banished. Do you get the picture? Jeremiah was a Levite from Anatot. Jeremiah was the descendant of a banished, punished priestly family. He had real cause to think that he wasn't worthy. He had real cause to try to put up a defense and say, I don't deserve to be your spokesperson, God. How can I serve you? But God renews and God calls Jeremiah, a banished Levite, for his service. he will do the same for us. If he did that for Jeremiah, can't he do that for his people Israel? The Jewish people that have so often walked in opposition to God's calling? Isaiah 49 says, Israel, I knew you. I formed you in the womb. I made you. You're my servant to be a light to the nations and to bring my salvation to the ends of the earth. You may feel exiled, Israel. You may feel banished, Jewish people. But there is still a task. There is still a calling. God has still appointed you. He can still touch the mouth and make it clean. He can still equip. He can still prepare. If He can do that for Israel, He can do that for us as well. Will we say, "Hineni"?